This man changed the world.
Allahu Akbar, Khomeini Rahbar. Allahu Akbar, Khomeini Rahbar.
Our bosses couldn't cope with the idea of an 80-year-old Ayatollah, which they didn't even know what an Ayatollah was, who lived on garlic and onions and yogurt, directing a revolution that was about to topple America's most important ally.
شما در این قرن معجزه کردید. ملت ایران ملت معجزه آسای قرن است.
الله اکبر. خمینی رهبر. الله اکبر. خمینی رهبر.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Exalted, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Salam, hello and welcome to our audience, and particularly a warm welcome to our program, The Man Who Changed the World. Of course, this program is dedicated to the memory of Imam Khomeini, may God bless his great soul, and it's about his life and times and his great personality. I'm your host for this program, Ijaz Hussain, and I'd first like to welcome my guest who on the program who is going to discuss this great personality with me, and that's Dr. Mahdi Tarabi, my good friend, and I'd like to say salam to him and welcome him to the program.
Alaykum salam rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. He's an Islamic scholar as well as an academic and a researcher as well. I think we're going to begin from, you know, our continuation, because this is like part two. Mm-hmm. Of what we were saying in our previous program, which was about the Bakhtiar government and about the fact that Imam Khomeini, may God bless his great soul, was like a lion, right? In yes. terms of, you know, you talked about the throffer that was given by the American government at the time.
Threat and offer.
And, you know, Imam Khomeini, may God bless his great soul, comes out with the fatwa for a jihad exactly. against the U.S., which was something that, you know, they hadn't come across. They were completely...
No, it was, bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, basically, and this goes back to, you know, we mentioned in the previous program that Supreme Leader recently was talking about Imam.
Sure.
And we had the quote. I don't know if you want, maybe we can...
Yeah, let's have that quote again. You know, if we could have that quote, please, from the Supreme Leader, and then we'll carry on with our discussion here.
کسی مثل امام بزرگوار ما که یک تنه وارد شد
Somebody like our magnanimous Imam who single-handedly entered the arena managed to unite all the people and launch this great movement with his firm determination, faith and reliance on God, relied more than anything else on knowledge and understanding, on worship of God, and on the enthusiasm which originates from one's heart and soul. Until the end of his life, this great person used to wake up in the middle of the night and shed tears despite being old and physically weak.
با وجود پیری و ناتوانی و شکستگی نیمه شب بر میخواست اشک میریخت ما خبر داشتیم از نزدیکان ایشان که
We knew it because we had heard from his close relatives, who knew everything about his lifestyle, that he used to wake up in the middle of the night and ask Allah, the Exalted, for help. He used to keep a vigil at night. He was like this at night, and during the day, he used to enter the arena like a roaring lion and defeat global powers and solve the people's problems. He used to strengthen and set in motion the determination of all the people, thanks to his reliance on spirituality.
Yes,
I mean, as I say, it's a very, very powerful speech there by the Supreme Leader about Imam Khomeini. But carry on with your point
so
from the last...
We talked about the fact that, you know, at the time, you basically had the Shah left.
That's right.
And he had appointed a government led by Shapur Bakhtiar as the government. Imam, from the beginning, refused to acknowledge the legality of this government, which, you know, we're talking about the fact that Imam was a person who combined spirituality, but also was very courageous and also led people.
Yes.
And this being something very new, or he revived this
revived it. Yeah.
This divine tradition, this prophetic tradition.
Prophetic tradition.
Which had been lost, you know, with the
over
separation.
Over the centuries, unfortunately. Yes.
And and having to do with the weaknesses of Christianity itself.
Yes.
This is why it was abandoned in Western civilization, because Christianity itself was, you know, changed in such a way that it no longer
became relevant.
Exactly. Mm. So at that time, they said to Imam, I'm just quickly repeating what we spoke about in the previous program and then continuing in our analysis of this. Mm-hmm. They said to Imam at that time, well, you got what you wanted. The Shah has left, you know, it's done.
That's right.
Good job.
Good job. Go back to the mosque.
Okay. Right. And so basically they sent a message to him through one of these people that was connected to both sides, saying that, you know, if you don't accept the Bakhtiar government, we will tell the Americans. If you don't accept the Bakhtiar government, we will tell the army, which at that time the Americans had influence on, because a lot of the officers were American trained.
Sure.
We will tell the army to conduct a coup d'etat and arrest all of you and execute all of you. So what would be the usual response? Because remember, we quoted Henry Kissinger saying that Imam would make decisions that were, you know, earth-shaking. We didn't know how to deal with it. We didn't know what to do. He would do things that were completely different than everybody else.
Absolutely.
And again, Henry Kissinger saying that, you know, this was because his view was based on divine teachings, on divine teachings and precepts, and thus we didn't know what to do with all this. And, you know, you talked about the fact that, you know, other administration members at that time, U.S. administration, said that, you know, when in the meetings of experts,
Secretary of State George Shultz
would come up with, you know, what should we do about Ayatollah Khomeini, and everybody would just look at each other, you know, we don't know what to do.
Yeah, well, Shultz being of a German descent anyway, you know, and that's saying something.
Well, Henry is German.
He is German.
Right. Exactly.
Sorry.
Right.
So I stand corrected.
Right. Yeah. So the point is that Imam, in response to this threat by the Americans, says, if you do this, I will. He didn't issue the fatwa of jihad. He said, I will issue a fatwa of jihad, and we will fight and take over the country ourselves. So, you know, remember, this is in the context where the Americans, where Mr. Kissinger himself recently had overthrown Allende in Chile. What's the guy's name? Pinochet in Chile. And killed all the opposition.
Sure.
You had the same thing happening, Suharto in Indonesia, killing 500,000 Communist Party members, in Indonesia, or, you know, people related to it.
Sure.
You had this happening around the world by the Americans. What I mean with this happening is the military connected to the U.S. Conducting coup d'etats and killing the opposition to the Americans in the country.
Sure.
Okay, so this was not some empty threat.
There was not an empty threat.
This was not something, you know, people had seen this.
Well, I mean, I was going to also say that, you know, we're talking about the aftermath of even the Vietnam War, because even the Vietnam War was fairly recent up until the time of the Islamic Revolution. So let's not forget that there was a hell of a lot of war crimes and barbarity shown in Vietnam. And with, you know, the B-52 bomber, with all that, you know, those famous photographs that we see in Apocalypse Now, you know, they show the bombs all coming down, raining bombs all over Vietnam. So you're right, you know, it's not on the back of an empty threat. This is real. I mean, this is something
and
that
a lesser
they could have devastated
Iran. And a lesser man would have folded.
Exactly. A lesser man would have folded.
This is the point. Okay, this person who was the connection, which we mentioned in the previous program, he was a member of the religious national movement in Iran, who had lived in the States for many years, has spent his exile time in the States. He told the story on the BBC. We are quoting his story as he has explained in the BBC. So nobody thinks that we're making up stories.
No, we're not making up stuff. This is all archived.
Right. So he when he's telling this story on the BBC, you could tell he didn't understand. He was frustrated. He's like, why would Imam like tell them this? Why didn't he just accept it and go to Qom and, you know? And this is a religious person.
Yes.
Remember, this is not somebody, you know, who's, you know,
whatever. There are religious people in inverted commas and religious people.
So the point is, as you said, it's, you know, you having this deep belief. It's
deep
not only
belief,
about reading the Quran. It's not only about, you know, it's about
Because you
belief.
Mentioned this word faith, didn't you? You
right.
mentioned
it's faith.
This
it's not just knowing things. You have to believe in it.
Yeah,
when the Quran says that you can stand up to the biggest oppressors and be successful,
sure.
you have to believe it.
You have to believe it.
You know, it's good to read it. It's good to say, well, you know, give it. You're doing a speech. You're doing a radio program. Blah blah blah. You know, yeah. And the Quran says, but you don't really believe it in your life. You know, if you don't translate that in your life, you know, what's the point?
What's the point?
So this is the beauty of Imam, is that
mashallah,
he
yes.
had complete trust in Allah, had complete trust in the word of Allah.
Yeah, we could see that. We could see that.
And he lived it. And when he was challenged, and when he was tested by Allah, and when Shaitan tried to, you know, threaten him with what is it, with poverty and corruption,
kinds of things, corruption
right, he
was,
stood up and he, you know, said, this is the deal. So he, this is the first part, as
that's right. That's,
so then he comes to Iran. Bakhtiar government is still there. He enters the famous film of him coming with the plane.
Cemetery, yes.
And he goes directly from the airport. Yeah. He goes to Besht Sahara, which
throughout
is
the adulation of, you know, millions welcoming him at Mehrabad.
Right.
Airport,
and throughout the way on the road, as we've seen in the films.
Sure.
He goes straight to Besht Sahara, which is the main cemetery in Tehran.
These are big iconic images. Yes.
Right. And he goes to the area where many of the shuhada of the revolution and the fight
martyrs,
against
at Behesht Yazara,
against the regime of the Shah are buried, and he holds a speech there.
That's correct, yes.
And here, remember, this is with the threat that he's gotten.
Yes, already.
Okay, there's rumors, and everybody's scared that, you know, they're going to shoot down his plane. Mm. And they say to him, well, what if... he goes, takes a nap during the flight.
Yes, he does.
You know, they're like, everybody's like on tenderhooks.
Yeah,
like,
they're all sort of like...
you know, yeah, we're going to get shut down.
A SAM battery opening up any moment.
Right,
yeah.
And he goes and takes a nap, okay? Because he gets off the plane, you know, you have this, in this typical Eastern, you know, emotionalism saying, oh, what do you feel... You know,
right.
About entering, he goes...
John Simpson asked him that,
You know, he goes nothing. No, it was an Iranian.
Was it an Iranian?
It was also an Iranian. He says, what do you feel? And he says the famous heech, which
heech,
is...
yes.
Nothing. What do you feel? Nothing.
That's right.
And they misunderstood. Right. When he meant heech, it meant that, you know, this people coming and, you know, this is not the issue.
This is not the issue.
The fact
that's the
that,
most important
You know,
point,
it's not that I don't feel anything.
No,
it's the fact that this is not the point.
Point.
That, you know, I'm coming or there's going to be, you know. No. The point is, you know, the people and having justice and establishing justice.
That's right.
So he goes to Beit Zahra.
Yes.
He has that famous speech, which, you know, just thinking about it, I'm just, you know, you just get emotional because the speech starts with the children. There's a children's choir and they're singing this very famous song, which is in Iran, is famous, talking about the martyrs and... Well, anyways, I mean, this was it's a very moving and emotional thing. And then he starts talking and he says, you know, this is, you remember, 80-year-old Grand Ayatollah?
Exactly.
He says, we will punch this government in the mouth.
That's right.
We will establish our own government.
من دولت تعیین میکنم. من تو دهن این دولت میزنم.
من دولت تعیین میکنم. من به پشتیبانی این ملت دولت تعیین میکنم. من به واسطه این که ملت مرا قبول دارد
Okay, so remember, all of this in the context of coup d'etat, you know, killing, executions, this is all
That's
being
right.
threatened.
That's right.
So he goes and he stays in Qom at first. And what does the Bakhtiar government do? They issue martial law. They proclaim martial law.
That's true.
Which is what all
of course.
Oppressors do,
at some point.
At some point, Which is that people are not allowed to be in the streets after 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
I see.
This was the martial law.
Okay.
And anybody there without permission will be shot.
Yes.
Remember, will be shot.
Shot. Yes. And this comes in the background, of course.
And people lost lives because of this. They had to go to the hospital. They couldn't go to the hospital.
Exactly.
People, you know, needing medication.
Sure.
So this is, it's real.
Because
it's not,
I wanted to put it in the context.
This, because during the time of the Shah, the Shah would
do
this.
Yeah, that's right. This is what I wanted
this
to mention.
Would, you know,
in 1963, for example.
Right.
Yeah,
so this was not something, you know, people knew what this
meant. People knew what this meant. Okay. This is serious.
Serious stuff. Mm. So. What does Imam do? They say to him, well, it's martial law. What does Imam do? What does Imam say? Mm-hmm. Again, roaring lion.
Roaring lion.
Courage.
Back to that. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
He says, tell the people to go out.
Out. My God. And knowing full well what the consequences are.
People around him. I'm talking about people around him.
Yeah.
Not even, you know, Yeah. Religious people, you know, revolutionaries, yeah. they folded. They said, well, what if the people get killed?
Killed.
Mm. You know, the blood will be on your hands. This, you know, these kind of, you know, threats and these kind of, you know, of underhanded.
Yes.
As though Imam doesn't know.
Doesn't know, yeah.
Right. So Imam's very calmly just says, tell the people to go out.
Go out.
And they went out, and that's it. That's when the revolution was successful.
Successful, yes.
Because the enemies, internally and externally, saw that there's nothing they can do.
Do.
No threat is going to scare this man. Okay?
Excellent.
And it's at that time when you see that within a couple of weeks, within a short period of time, the Bakhtiar government falls.
Falls, yes.
Okay?
Yeah.
And they talked about it in their interviews later on. I'm talking about the members of that of that government. We had a list of 500. We are already, you know, I'm talking about the Bakhtiar government, the military, which was supposed to do the coup d'etat and arrest everyone.
Right, right.
The Bakhtiar government itself, the people in that government, again, on the BBC, so people don't think we're making up stories here. Came on and said, we had a list of 500 or 600 people. Yes. We already had the prison.
I saw the same program.
We had the prison ready in some far-off place. We were going to go and arrest everybody in one night and take them to that camp and decide what we're going to do with them. And, you know, and we had the list of executions and so on. And so,
they did.
So, again, this shows the man, because we're talking about his extraordinary personality.
Of course we are.
His reliance on God. None of this could have happened for Imam. Imam could not have had that strength and that courage if he didn't believe in God.
God, of course.
If he didn't trust God completely. Okay? If he did not have complete faith and belief in the promises of God as is stated in the Quran.
Sure.
If he did not have complete trust and did not take as his model the model of the Prophet, peace be upon him.
Of course.
Of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Peace be upon him, yes.
Okay. So, this is what we're trying to say here, which is that you have this man, the way that the Supreme Leader explains it, who was the same level that he was courageous and able to come out. He also spent the nights, you know, pleading and seeking grace
from God. Yes.
From God.
Yes.
He derived his strength from that personal worship and that personal servitude. To God,
of course,
which then translated into his power,
of course,
against the enemies. This is an important lesson for Muslims.
It is very much so.
Your power doesn't come from anything but God.
God, absolutely.
And how do you tap that? You tap that by being a servant of God. Okay,
quite.
We say it. It's easy to say.
It's easy to say,
but it's difficult to implement. You know, we all are. So don't, you know, when we say these things, we're not talking as though we've done this, you know, very well in our own lives.
I wouldn't even want to venture there.
But at least we saw somebody who did.
Who did.
And there was Imam.
Mm.
And he will always be an example. And he will also be Hujjat. He will be
Hujjat, yes.
For us in the next world. In the sense that, I'm talking, could be against us. Allah will say to us, look, I sent somebody. He was your example. You could have followed.
Because the Holy Quran says that there is no time, no period that the world will not be without an imam, right? So even though we are still waiting for the last savior to reappear, but, you know, this is no less.
On a lesser degree, we can say that somebody who lived in this time.
Time, yes.
Allah can say to them, look, here was a man.
Here was an
example. He lived Islam.
Mm-hmm.
He was completely. It's interesting. Shahid Muhammad Baghir Sadr, the famous martyr from Najaf Hawza, Iraqi.
Iraqi, yes.
You know,
yes. May God
bless. Who was one of the? I mean, he's also one of those incredible human
great
beings
scholars.
That just come along every couple centuries.
Centuries, yes.
He said, you know, immerse yourself into Imam and his teachings. The way Imam immersed himself into Islam. Okay, this is his famous saying. Okay, so Imam was immersed in Islam.
Immersed.
And who says this? Shahid Asad says
this.
Okay? Yes. And he's saying, Shahid Asad is saying to his students and to the young people at that time and to the followers and to the... He's saying, you know, look at the way Imam immersed himself in Islam. You immerse yourself in this life and these teachings and this example of the Imam. And it's interesting, Shahid Asad, who, according to, you know, everybody who was there in Najaf at that time, basically was a mujtahid from before he reached the age of taklif. So, you know, this is very rare.
Very rare.
It's very rare that somebody so young.
He was a genius.
He was a genius.
He was a genius.
Okay. Mm-hmm. He was certified genius.
He was.
Okay. So they asked him, by the time he was 15, 16, he was mujtahid, meaning he was a full ayatollah in terms of being able to issue fatwas. Very difficult. And a person like him has this to say about Imam. He says, if Imam ordered me to become a judge in some far-off village in Iran, I would do so in a heartbeat.
My God.
Okay? This is a man who is a full, you know, full scholar in all branches of Islamic teachings, philosophy, fiqh, usul, you know, history, a complete scholar at a young age, a genius.
No doubt.
Because, you know, we've had that in our history. People like Ibn Sina, people Allama Hilli.
He was a genius. I mean,
you know, we've had people
His works were even acknowledged in Paris, you know, because they even foresaw the end of capitalism.
So anybody who's familiar with Shahid Mohammad Baghrasad knows what we're talking about.
I know.
And here's a man who says, if Imam ordered me, this is after the revolution, and this is one of the reasons, this is the main reason they killed him. Saddam killed him, because he did not renounce and denounce Imam and the revolution.
That's right.
Which was a major threat to Saddam, and then of course Saddam attacked. So, and so you have somebody like Shahid Asad, who with this heavy scholarly weight, with this amazing, you know, talent and abilities, a real leader. He's saying to us, if Imam ordered me to become a judge in a small village or a small area in Iran, I would do it in a heartbeat. Okay? This is the level of person we're talking about. We have Maraje, we have Ayatollah Uzmas, we have... And these, they are all, you know, we kiss their hand, and they they are the ones that we follow when we're talking about... And then you have somebody like Imam, who's just... on a totally different level. He's marja, he's alim, he's faqih, he's arif, and then he's a leader. He's a leader of humanity. He's a leader of people, of societies, of the ummah. Not only does he teach it and discuss it on a scholarly level, he implements it. He lives it.
He lives it.
Okay? This is the difference. This is why we are, this is what we're so lacking in the world of Islam.
We are.
We sit around, even the good ones, we sit around, we talk a lot, we have it all figured out theoretically, but nobody takes action. It's about action. Islam is about what you do. Okay? You can have all the laws memorized. You can have the entire Quran memorized. You can know the history of the Prophet, peace be upon him, backwards. If you don't act on it, if you don't implement it in your life, it doesn't, there's no point
to it all.
Right? Yes. This is the, as they say, muqaddama, it's the introduction to you acting on it. When a man like Imam is threatened by the most powerful
government
forces in the earth, he doesn't fold. This is what the Prophet did.
Yes.
The Prophet was being threatened by everyone around him. Quraysh, they tried to buy him off.
They threatened him.
They killed the people around him. Yeah. You know, banished him.
That's right.
They imposed,
boycotted him.
They imposed economic sanctions.
Sanctions on him, yes. It sounds very similar, you know, very familiar.
The babies were dying in Shebe Abu Talib, the 2 years that they were living in the desert, that's, you know, right, before they went to Medina.
Yes.
The kids were dying because of a lack of medication. Gee, sounds familiar, right?
Yes.
And so he stood firm, the Prophet, peace be upon him. You had similar things happening to the imams, Imam Ali alayhi salam being the prime example of this. You have, the issues that are surrounded Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein alayhi salam in the time of, you know, Muawiyah and Yazid. And so, you know, these are the ones we follow, and this is who Imam followed. The example of our leaders, of our religious leaders, of our divine leaders.
Divine leaders, yes.
The Prophet and the Imams. Imam Khomeini lived it.
Yes.
He showed to us that it's possible to do this and to be successful and to die as a man who has complete calmness in his heart and who has maintained his dignity throughout his life.
Yes.
There's a famous story they talk about. And you have to imagine Iran at that time, at the time of the Shah, which is, you know, it's the king, right?
Mm.
Wherever he goes, you stand up, you bow, you kiss his hand, you know, as we still have today in some countries.
Yes, we do, yes.
You know, you have to do the
very familiar
part of the little curtsy, and you have to do the little whatever.
Especially if you're going to receive a knighthood, you know.
Right. So, these things are imperial traditions.
Yes, of course they are.
And, you know, not very Islamic.
No.
Just, you know, putting it out there for discussion.
Sure.
So, there's a famous story about the Shah saying, I want to visit the ulama in Qom. This is maybe, you know, 15, 20 years before the maybe a little bit more, before the revolution.
Okay.
And in an imperial society, in a royal society, this is like the big deal. The Shah is coming to visit. Oh my God, you know, this is it. All right? So the Shah enters the room. All the ulama get up, and Imam doesn't get up. You have to imagine, this is at the peak of the Shah's power.
Yes.
He is the king, you know, you have to throw yourself at his feet.
We're talking about Savak, one of the most ruthless secret police that was operating here in this country.
You know, people being thrown out of helicopters and, you know, and being, disappearing in the salt.
Not far here from Qum.
Right,
you know,
disappearing
the
in the salt lakes of you know, around Qum, whatever.
Qum, yeah.
So, you know, here's a man.
Yeah.
He comes to visit, and his visit is not, you know, he says, I want, out of respect. Well, it's not out of respect. It's a threat.
It's a
saying,
threat.
Listen, I know you guys. I'm here. You better acknowledge me. Mm. You better kiss the hand.
Mm.
Right?
Mm.
So he's coming there. Everybody gets up. Imam doesn't get up. That's it. You know, the example we brought was at the time of the revolution, even before the revolution. You know, this is at the
he's
height.
An extraordinary man.
At the height of the power of the king, he stands. You know, and they're in the same room. Mm. It's not like some theoretical opposition. He's saying to the king, "Look, I don't have to stand for you."
No. And who are you anyway?
Right. Who are you anyway? So, to summarize all this.
Yes, please.
We have a man, and an example which is unique. It's truly unique.
I think so, yeah.
We had the privilege, and Allah blessed us to be able to see a person like that.
Yes, and live in his time.
Right. And thus, after that, everything changed for us.
It did.
We can no longer be the way we were before.
That's true.
This is the point. Yeah. This is the point of what the Supreme Leader is talking about when he talks about that he's on the level or very close to the level of the prophets and the awliya, that he changed humanity, he changed humans.
Mm.
It was more than just, you know, as big a deal as, you know, ending 2,500 years of, you know, monarchy.
Because that's what we're seeing. This is not a narrow dynamic change just in the events of history. We are talking about something very, very fundamental.
It's a profound change.
Yes, it's a very profound change.
After, you know, the world before Imam is very different than the world
after the Imam.
And especially in the Muslim world, especially among Muslims, but even non-Muslims. You have many cases and stories and, you know, you've seen them yourselves in your life.
Yeah, of course we have.
Where people who had nothing to do with Islam were completely, you know,
mesmerized
by Imam and their lives changed after that. You know, people. And we saw them, and we know them, and they are still living, and they can bear witness themselves more than we can. But we saw them, that their life changed because of what of Imam and the things he said and the things he did, and you know, I think a lot of what we see today in the world, whether it's related to Islamic awakening, and this is something the Supreme Leader has mentioned many times, whether it's related to Islamic awakening, whether it's related to just this general idea of Muslims believing in Islam and wanting to have their own way of living and governing and lifestyle, as opposed to this imposed Western lifestyle.
Sure.
A lot of what we see, even in so-called third world countries, in places like Asia or Africa or Latin America, this rebirth in terms of, you know, having your own institutions, becoming major players in the world, and not simply becoming, you know, colonial subjects or, you know, appendages to the West. I think a lot of that, Imam contributed greatly to this thinking, even for non-Muslims.
They really changed our frame of mind.
They saw Imam as a leader of a, you know, third world country, so-called, a leader of a liberation movement, a leader that stood up to imperialism, mainly American imperialism, and was able to, you know, establish a successful nation. And again, even if we take the standards by which the West measures these things, we're not even talking about by our own standards, the Islamic standards by which we say that Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, has been successful. Even if we take the materialistic Western standards, if we look at the way this country has developed, you know, materially in terms of infrastructure, in terms of education, in terms of having an educated and capable population, in terms of its scientific achievements, in terms of its medical achievements, even if you take those, you will see that Imam's way was successful and led to the betterment of the life of tens of millions of people.
Thank you for that, Dr. Mahdi Tarawi. A very valuable contribution today on the program. And it only leaves me to say, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. May the peace and mercy and blessings of Allah be upon you all. Thank you very much for listening today, and goodbye. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.